Welcome to episode 463 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we share a grand conversation with regular contributor Kitty Bell Burbank, playwright, poet, professor, baker, and candlestick maker, among other things. And the two of us discuss reverse racism. Maybe we treat those from Europe a bit differently. We talk about post-postmodernism, letting the racists have a voice as part of free speech, journalism as the fourth estate, right speech, propaganda, con artists as entertainers, Eastern Europe, ethical persuasion, and rich people dancing. A grand conversation with Kitty Bell Burbank this go round. We have an EW essay titled Pharaohs and Immigrants. I share a humorous piece published in the February 2022 issue of Harper's Magazine titled Uncool Whip. It's a series of actual complaints submitted to the city of Reno, Nevada last year. And we have a poem called Purple Love. All of this, of course, will be imbued and infused with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It is so nice to be with you. Let's get to it. Episode 463 of Troubadours and Raconteurs.
Your love, when I'm far away, in another place, hold it out too much, just as your pillow, waiting for your love, you in all the ways, in another place. Thinking of, just can't get enough. Just
chest is your pillow. Waiting for your love. You in all the ways. In another place. All I'm thinking of. Just can't get enough.
Pharaohs and immigrants. Fantasy versus a perception of reality does me no good. When I'm two steps into my hood and with nothing to offer it, this post-postmodern epithet of personal slavery has me wrapped up tightly within fear deeply rooted in the tissue and marrow, the skin and hair follicles, through my breath and my breath, until all mindfulness and joy are impossible. The dead of quiet, the placid home of complacent surrender to empty nihilistic delusions of grandeur, power, and control. As if I could gather and compel a posse with which to roll. Stuffed animals on the brown-gray couch. Marquez has a broken jaw and can't gnaw on them. Ouch. But Katie girl can and does. She is young and vibrant and chocolat. The loons are on top of the neighbor's roof, singing their unique tunes. Lester and Zaria are Egyptian immigrants working at Whole Foods, cleaning and stocking the bins, organizing the pallets, digesting the condescension, and subtle sense of superiority emanating effortless from their peers. And thinking of the pharaohs and pyramids and slaves, all part of their ancestry and the stereotypes. Sally, the hot dog guy, is waiting outside with warming chili sauce and cold mustard in his push cart. I purchase a plant-based link and ask for a slice of rye or pumpernickel. The sun peeks through the clouds and shines on us all. The bodega, the sidewalk, the blue sky mountains all call. Tomorrow is parade day, come rain or snowfall. Spring will be here soon, and it's time, perhaps, for a Gershwin tune.
Girl, 'cause you're in what you find. Problems that you have aren't the ones on your mind. And you can't stop the rain. It's always coming down.
Kitty Bell Burbank, testing. Is that you?
It is me. I need to move my speaker to the headphones.
Go for it.
Right. How do I do it? Oh, I have to plug them in. Oh, wow. It's one of those days.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
There. How's that? No more echo.
Yeah, you got it going?
Yep, I'm plugged in.
All right. Well, Kitty Bell Burbank, regular contributor here on Troubadours and Rock on Tours, I'm happy to say. She is a playwright, a poet, a professor, a baker, and a candlestick maker, among other things. How's it going?
I'm grateful for spring break. I've got a lot going on this semester, so three teaching contracts and a part-time job.
yeah
it's challenging.
Yeah, it is. I bet you you're stimulated though.
Yes, very much so. It's always new challenges, always rewarding, and I'm doing what I love, so I can't really complain about that.
No, you hit it right on the head. And you really have a lot of great areas of focus that you shared with me for today's conversation. You know, we had a little bit of a text back and forth, and you know, the first thing I have on the list is reverse racism with Ukrainian refugees. You know, I guess you're obviously referring to the horrible situation in the Ukraine right now, and you're noticing a reverse racism with Ukrainian refugees. So are you talking about...
you know what I'm talking about.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. You want to explain?
That's how I know it's true. You know, it's not just me noticing the immense kindness and compassion that we're having for white European refugees that we didn't have for Syrian refugees, that we didn't have for refugees coming up from South America, Central America. And when I say we, I mean like not you and me, but mainstream American voices, media. But it's even more than that, isn't it? It's like the Red Cross is over there. Like everybody's, I heard that there were people going over to fight, like voluntarily to help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just the response on all kinds of levels is notably different than when people in other parts of the world are being driven out of their home. Don't you think?
Yes. I see it and I agree with you. And I was talking with my better half about it. We were discussing it a couple of days ago, you know, Jenny and I. Yeah, Syria, you know, and ourselves guilty of it. When the same stuff was being perpetrated against the Syrians by that nincompoop in Russia. And mm-hmm. and we, you know, we didn't get that upset about it. I mean, we said, oh, that's too bad, but not like, to be honest, not like we are now when witnessing it happening in Europe. You know, and as you said, South American, Central American refugees fleeing our, you know, atrocities too. We aren't as compassionate, African countries, what have you. So mm-hmm. what do we do about it though? I mean, why is it that way?
Yeah. Is anybody talking about it or are we just pretending like that's, we're not as racist as we really are? Like, I think they had a thing on Saturday Night Live where they were making fun of Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham, and they had the Tucker Carlson actor character person say that people coming in from Mexico crossing the border were more of a threat than Russia, and I don't want to get it wrong, but something like that, and saying, but I can say that because I'm a racist, and like that's a joke.
Yeah.
You know, but it's true.
Right. It's satire.
Right. But is satire enough? I don't know. It just seems like, I just hope people are cognizant of it. And I mean, because you don't want to be like, oh, don't be compassionate and don't be kind and don't want to help people and don't welcome whoever is inevitably going to come to the United States. Don't, like, of course, let them in. And of course, let's do what we can. You don't want to tell people not to be that way. But how can you say, see how you are right now? This is how you need to be with other people in the world. Mm-hmm. Like, even if they're Muslims or even if they have darker skin color or aren't European.
Right. Right. You know, they're human. You know, they're sapiens. We need to take care of all sapiens, all humans, and have the same sort of compassion and awareness of the strife that they're experiencing. Yeah, it's so logical, it's so ethical, but yet we all, even those of us who, well, I guess I'm being presumptuous, who have the best of intentions, such as myself, I fall into it as well. You know, I do. I know I do. And it's troubling. It's troubling. It's not right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess satire, you said, is that enough? It's a, I mean, artists, how much can they do? I guess that's what they do. They get us thinking, and hopefully then after we watch their work or experience their work, we take that new perspective, that new sense of awareness or what have you, those emotions that it conjured with us, and we continue to think about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I would hope that somebody will put together something that shows the different language that we've used in response to crises around the world, and the different tone. Because even like CNN is obviously liberal, but, and I don't watch a lot of it, but my friend does, so I see it when I go over to his house, and it's like, even I know. I feel it in my gut that they're talking differently about this. That they're
CNN,
using
yeah.
different language.
Yeah.
You know, that, I mean, yes, maybe they were more concerned about Syrian refugees, and maybe they did point out the racism in, you know, people's response to that situation, or their religious discrimination, or, you know, calling people terrorists or whatever. But I think there's more. It's just treating it differently. The news coverage is on 24/7 right now.
Right.
And
that wasn't the case with Syria. That's not the case when atrocities are going on in South America or Africa. It's not, we just don't give it as much, because we're European primarily, you know, in terms of the leadership of this country. It's a European driven mindset and experience. You know, we look at World War II and we connect what's going on now to that war, and we don't want it to happen again. But there have been many significant wars throughout the world that we're unaware of, and we don't see the same pattern or concerned of the same patterns occurring in an African country, or, you know, a South American country. So there's a bias, and there's a narrow-mindedness.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, I mean, if it's also because, you know, of where we're at in the world right now, like this sort of post-pandemic uncertainty and the threat that Russia is, and, you know, that, I mean, there is some sort of a sense that, like, Russia and China and Iran or whoever could just, like, all get together and gang up on us.
Right.
And maybe that's what people are feeling is a more palpable threat than they feel in other situations where we're not adjacent as much.
Well, you're right. And the narrative, you know, in this country for years, we had the Cold War, and Russia was always, you know, the ominous player in that Cold War, the Soviet Union. And so, you know, it's part of our narrative here in the United States. It's like all of a sudden another chapter is being written in this book that we've all read or heard about. The propaganda, you mentioned propaganda too. You think about the Russian people. I mean, there are a lot of Russian Americans, Ukrainian and Americans, Eastern Europeans who were part of the Soviet Union. But in particular, the Russian Americans, I would bet that they're not saying, all right, Putin, go take over Ukraine. They're probably troubled and embarrassed, and they have relatives in the Ukraine too. Ukraine and Russia, they're cousins, they're brothers, you know, they have a shared history to a certain extent, their proximity, people go back and forth. So it must be difficult for those Russian Americans here.
Yeah, it is. I mean, when you look at that section of the world, I mean, that's where my ancestors came from. Those countries were constantly being, you know, reassigned, taken over by different people. You know, I have Slovakian relatives, and like used to be like Czechoslovakia was a thing, and now it's not. And then, you know, my grandmother is part Russian and part Slovak, and who knows who was in charge when and where you lived, you know, like your family could be here and it depended on what decade it was, who was running your country, you know, and what it was called. So there's a long history of that, but there is something unhinged about leaders right now that have power, maybe, that they just do things that were unspeakable. You know, we saw that during like Trump, that it was, oh, this is unprecedented. This never would have happened before. Nobody ever would have gotten away with this before. Nobody ever would have attempted to take over the Capitol on January 6th before. You know, but we're seeing these things now where it's like, we can't really trust people to stay in a lane of good behavior. It's like, we really don't know what they're capable of.
Right, or what we are, you know, the general public are capable or incapable of. You know, it might be a better way of putting it. What do we do? Like, we sit around and those of us that are privileged, and we watch and we listen and we get upset while we're waiting for our Chinese to be delivered to the front door so we can have something to eat while we're watching it. You know.
Go ahead.
No, it's strange. You know, it's strange. It's somewhat surreal. It's like a crossover between entertainment and emotional stimulation and really understanding the gravity and the reality of the situation at hand. You know, it's odd.
Yeah, you mentioned the propaganda, and I think that. That's something I wanted to talk about, because it's this dark side of, like, I call it post-postmodern, right? So when I was in college in the 90s, you know, we were studying this postmodern idea of seeing through all these different lenses and not just from the, you know, the white colonist patriarchal male viewpoint that had been in charge of the narrative for a really long time, and opening it up. And we've been doing that for decades now, right? Opening up the conversation and letting people that were marginalized for a really long time have a voice. And we are listening to their stories. Well, some of us are, right? Listening to those stories and giving those people a seat at the table. And we've been doing all of that. But now we're in this sort of post-postmodern where, because we have all of these voices, we have to let even the horrible people, the racists have a voice. The Tucker Carlsons can spout out things that then Putin can turn around and put on Russian television to show that he has support in America right now. And then they get to say that that's just fake news and people can listen to that and we can't stop it because we said everybody's allowed to speak.
So are you against it now, free speech?
Yeah, exactly. Of course not, right? Of course everybody deserves to have an opinion and everybody's viewpoint is valuable, but some of them are dangerous and destructive, but then who gets to decide? Right. So we're at this point. Well, who gets to make that judgment call?
Right.
We don't have that anymore. We don't have a control over decent speech, you know, the ethics. Right.
Right. And you mentioned how our system of ethical journalism, the fourth estate, as we often call it here in the United States, has been weakened. Especially during the buffoon presidency that we just went through before President Biden. And that is a means by which we could maybe keep ourselves connected to what's important, what is just, what is ethical. But if that's weakened, disrespected, then our system, our government, our society won't function as well.
Right. Well, we've segregated people ideologically now. So, I mean, separating people has long been the tactic, right?
Oh, yeah.
Keep these people
apart.
Divide
and conquer, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, now it's people are in their niche boxes and are being brainwashed essentially to believe in this one message or these speakers, you know, and I don't see how we get out of it. I really don't. And it's, you can see the effect on the young people, right?
What do you see? Like nihilism?
I see students who don't know what to believe, that don't know where to get news, that don't know. I mean, and that's part of college, right? Is trying to teach them the difference between good information and bad information and what is fact and what is analysis or interpretation.
Right.
Where to get. But then it's they're very confused. It's
right.
Hard for them to understand that some information can be trusted and some can't.
And
how to decide for themselves, how to have enough confidence in their own ability
exactly.
to know, oh, that's a conspiracy theory? They thought that there was truth to that.
You're right. I'm glad you said the confidence and also a sense of responsibility they have to have to be, you know, active citizens in their society. It's on them to learn how to discern and to take the time and effort to look at everything they possibly can and process it and then decide what they believe in, what is true and such, as you put it. You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now, we find con artists entertainment now, right? Anna Delvey is fun and glamorous, and she makes us laugh. And it's almost like if you can figure out how to get money and power, we respect you no matter how you get there.
That's awful. Yeah.
Isn't it awful?
It sure is. You know, you reminded me of something, too, when you were talking about free speech and how, you know, what is okay, though, and discerning between what is healthy and not healthy and the like. And it reminds me of something else that you wanted to discuss today, right speech, the Buddhist concept of right speech. How could that help us, or could that help us in this with our dilemma?
Right. Well, it comes down to that idea of ethics, essentially, right, that it's communication is a spiritual thing, right? You're exchanging with somebody else, and therefore you have a responsibility to tell the truth. And of course that's hard when people don't even know what the truth is.
Right.
And to only talk about what is relevant, right? Don't bog the discourse down in diversion. Or, you know, smoke and mirrors. You know, this is relevant. This is happening right now. This is information that you can use. This has value. True, timely, and useful, right? Can this be useful? So we have a lot of information out there that's not useful. I think last time we kind of went off on, you know, my TikTok rant. Right?
Yes, yes.
I do not need to see rich people dancing. I don't care. Like, there's so much that's not helpful that is, we're drowning in that. And so that idea you can go back to Aristotle, you know, talking about rhetoric. This is ethical persuasion, right? The ethics are that really important part that we lost, you know, and we don't all need to be the same religion in order to have respect for that, those ethical concepts of, you know, is this true? Is it useful? Is it timely? And feeling a responsibility to communicate in a way that adds value. You know, that's what I always tell my students, add value to the conversation. If it's not, then don't get rid of it.
I like that. adding value to the conversation. You're adding a lot of value to this conversation, Kitty Bell Burbank, here on Troubadours and Rock on Tours, regular contributor. And, you know, when we're talking about how we muddle through and what our responsibilities are as individuals and what is our capability, a lot of it comes down to training. You know, again, you know, we have intelligence innately, but if people are not trained well enough through their school system to be able and to feel confident enough to be able to navigate through a complicated maze of information and challenges that overlap or intertwined, how could we have a good debate, ethical persuasion occur? And we emotionally too, I think we're very, very immature. We get offended, and we get very defensive when someone disagrees with us. Instead of looking at what they're saying, hearing what they're saying openly, and then responding in kind. We don't do that enough. It's like, you're my enemy. And dividing, as you mentioned earlier, it works for those powers, those people that are in power already. And religion does that. That's a big part of it. You know, we don't look at ourselves as the same species, you know, with the same parts inside, you know, esoterically and physically, metaphysically and physically. We don't look at ourselves that way as sapiens. We look at ourselves as Catholics or Protestants or Jews or, you know, Muslims or whatever, you know, and then on top of that, nationalism. That's the problem, a part of it at least. What do you think?
Absolutely. And I think we talked about this before, is what is not happening in schools, what they're not teaching out of fear, because we've seen teachers getting fired for wanting to teach critical race theory and books getting banned because they might potentially upset the students. But if you can't talk about anything, then they're never going to learn how, you know? Right. So then I end up with a classroom of college students that don't understand civics or laws or how legislation works, and how laws get to be passed and are debated, and how to do that effectively to be able to have some agency over your own life. It's, I mean, there's only so much you can do in a semester.
Yeah, it's only so much you can do in 15 weeks, 16 weeks. You're right.
Yeah, right? I mean, if it's not going to continue after that, then, you know, can we count on people to want to be educated?
Well,
want to learn.
My view has always been you shouldn't even have to go to college for that stuff. That stuff you should learn from K through 12, you know. Yeah. By the time you graduate from high school, you should be ready to go as a thinker who knows how to do all the things we're saying a person needs to do to be a fully functioning part of society. But that's not the way it is. It isn't. People go to college and don't even have that because we specialize too. You know, someone wants to be an engineer or a business person and they're really focusing heavily on that and they know that stuff well, but they're not being given the opportunity, enough opportunity to learn about a wide array of subject areas. So even with a college education, people still don't know.
It's become more of a trade school and less. I mean, as a humanities professor, I can say, like, it's just not valued right now.
No.
These ideas that are essential to democracy, right? To being able to keep a democracy in motion and not have it, you know, turn into a model of Putin's government. I don't even know what to call that because it's not communism, right?
No, it's dictatorship.
Oligarchy
slash dictatorship.
Right, which is exactly, you know, what the Trump branch of is trying to accomplish, right? That's what they want. They want to outlaw fake news in America. They want to get rid of anything that weakens their power and ability to rule over other people. It feels like it could happen in a way that I don't remember feeling in my lifetime. You know, even under Reagan and whatever, I always felt like, oh yeah, we're going to get through this. We're going to continue to evolve, you know? But now the pendulum could so easily keep swinging the other way.
Right. And that's why we have to be diligent. And I think I still have faith in us in the United States. I do. We have Yeah, I do. I mean, we are pups in a lot of way in terms of our understanding of the world. But I think there's a certain point where there's going to people wake up, and I hope so. I see a lot of people that had Trump signs up on their porches, finally take them down, and I'm hoping they're starting to see. And it polls suggest that less and less people are supporting him. I'm hoping people are starting to wake up and become more mature and responsible about their you know, who they support and who they are as individuals.
Now, that's a good point. I am seeing that shift with the environment.
The natural environment, you mean?
Yeah.
You know, how people on both sides of support environmental causes, you mean?
It just seems that we have so many more healthy options, you know. There you can buy an electric car and there's a place to charge it next to a restaurant where you can get plant-based foods that come from local farms in northeastern Pennsylvania.
Right.
You know, you can buy things that aren't encased in plastic, and even like clothing companies now, they're offering their own used options, so like people can trade in their stuff and you can go to like Levi's or something, I don't know if that's accurate, but buy somebody else's used clothes. So people are thrifting. They're looking for sustainable options exist in fibers that I couldn't find, you know, 10 years ago.
It's progress. It's progress for sure. Hey, Kitty Bell, you know what? Our time is pretty much... It goes so quickly. So much more to talk with, but it's good to know that you're part of Troubadours and Rock on Tour. So we'll be talking with you again soon. We can continue our conversation. Enjoy the rest of the semester. Next time we talk will be summertime, I suppose, on air. I'll see you around campus, I hope, too.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm there a few days a week.
Well, yeah. Any last words until next time to share with the throngs of listeners?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, you know, I was kind of getting into a moment of despair there and you pulled me back out. I think usually it's the other way. So I like to know that, you know, that we're friends and we can help each other that way. You know, there's always somebody that can pull you out of your despair when you need it.
Well said. Me too. Thank you for being there for me as well and for our listeners. Mm-hmm. Talk with you again soon, Kitty Bell.
Okay, yeah. Happy International Women's Day, by the way.
Happy International Women's Day.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Ciao.
For forgiveness.
And now, as published in Harper's Magazine, their February 2022 edition, something they titled Uncool Whip. And these are public comments, complaints submitted to the city of Reno, Nevada back in 2020. Here they are. One night this summer, I was walking with my wife and two friends from out of town. We witnessed someone cracking a whip about 20 yards away. It was embarrassing. Now we have a running joke about people cracking whips being a thing in Reno. I felt safe until I experienced a man walking in my direction cracking a whip. These are all different complaints, by the way. Whip cracking is not an average city noise. Whips sound like gunfire. The whips terrify my son. The whip crackers have taken over. They crack whips 24/7, often resulting in sonic booms, which in turn cause seizures, tinnitus, vertigo, nosebleeds, and other medical issues. They make our lives a living hell. I have not gotten a full night's sleep in 2 years. I was woken up today at 4 a.m. by a man with a whip. I can hear whipping as I type this at 2:21 p.m. Whips break both tree limbs and industrial lights. They cause neurological insults and injuries. Can we consider an ordinance prohibiting whip cracking? No good comes from allowing people to slap long pieces of leather on the sidewalk. And finally, as a long-time whip maker, I am concerned about the city of Reno's approach to a minor problem. Do whips have a negative history? Certainly, they have been used in manners that are considered abhorrent. They have also been useful. Whip cracking is therapeutic and relaxing. I could more easily harm another person with a 2x4. Complaints about whip cracking in Reno, Nevada. Thanks for listening.
Too late to whip it into shape.
Purple Love. My ceramic coffee cup says love. It is purple and brown with grooves and curves. It can hold 1/5 of a pot. Have you ever smoked weed in the morning? Wake and bake, snowflake. And the crazy day has begun. The bodega bell on its front door has rung. Carlos and Guinevere are out for a run. I once more hit the dark brown bowl and get ready to roll into the dynamic day. Let's pray to the universe and conjure us some fun. Habit, episode 463 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. Let's give thanks to those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, our good friend Kitty Bell Burbank, Harper's Magazine, some of the citizens of Reno, Nevada, and these musical artists: Thelonious Monk, Natalie Hemby, Neil Francis, Pranabin and Leon Bridges, Devo, Ricky Lee Jones, Bramford Marsalis, and Terrence Blanchard too. And of course, I would like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and do our best with this time. Take care of yourselves and others too.